fighting between Russia and Ukraine is the most intense since the Russian invasion began, as Russian forces unleash a massive attack on Sunday.
They have no souls, simply no souls. They bomb residential areas.
The U.S. military opens fire on Houthi rebels as they attack a cargo ship on the Red Sea.
The attackers fired on helicopters, and the helicopters fired back.
And it's an annual tradition.
Try to be more healthy, cut back on my drinking and cigar smoking, try to save up on some money, and overall try to live a better life.
Making resolutions as the world rings in the new year. Today is Monday, January 1st. And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Russia launched a fresh drone and missile assault on Ukraine after promising that strikes on the Russian border city of Belgorod by Ukraine would not go unpunished. Kyiv said 49 Iranian-made drones killed 24 people on the border, and 6 guided missiles hit residential buildings, offices, and cafes in Kharkiv.
What a present Russia made us for this new year. They have no souls, simply no souls. They bomb residential areas. There are people there. How can one do such a thing?
Let's go to Kyiv now and VOA's Anna Chernikova. Anna, the attacks these past 3 days have been the most intensive fighting since the Russian invasion in February 2022, yes?
Well, yes. I should say that Ukraine is under quite an intense shelling from Russian side, but at the same time, over the night, on December 31st, the information came in that Ukrainian forces reportedly also had certain successful attacks, drone attacks on the territory of Russia. However, Ukrainian authorities do not confirm this at this point.
I understand. It was quite an intense Russian barrage. What do you know of damage and injuries?
On the night of December 30 to 31st, the city of Kharkiv was under an extremely intense shelling. It was really probably one of the worst since the beginning of the full-scale invasion. And the main target was a very city center of Kharkiv. There is confirmation of a lot of damage of different kind, but most of the damage is very serious, and particularly one of the most modern hotels, which was very popular with foreign visitors of Kharkiv and with journalists as well, was under such attack as well, and it was hit by a missile. I should probably also mention that VOA team also stayed in that hotel during the last trip to Kharkiv. So a lot of the civilian infrastructure was damaged. A lot of residential areas was damaged, and a very city center was basically under a couple of hits. And according to local authorities, Russian forces used C-300 missiles for this attack, and the attack was conducted from the territory of Russia, which is just 40 kilometers from the city of Kharkiv.
How are people holding up? What's the mood in the country as we turn into the new year?
I should say that, of course, celebration spirit is not on. People are quite worried about this attack, of course. And actually, Ukrainians were getting ready for the attack as New Year Eve is coming, because apparently it's, a certain kind of tradition by Russian forces to conduct shelling either on the holidays, big holidays, especially religious holidays, or at such celebrations as the New Year's Eve. So Ukrainians were quite, tense. The mood was quite tense because Ukrainians were actually getting ready to such attacks as this New Year's time was coming. And actually, as we can see, 29th, the 30th, and the 31st of December is demonstrating quite bad attacks and shelling of the Russian Federation of the Ukrainian territory.
Thank you so very much, and have a good New Year and be safe.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. There were dueling national addresses from Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Україна стала сильніша. Українці стали сильніші. Україна жива.
President Zelensky said, Ukraine is alive. Ukraine lives. Ukraine fights. Ukraine advances. Ukraine overcomes the path. Ukraine gains. Ukraine works. Ukraine exists. He said Ukraine is stronger as it moves toward year two of the war.
Хочу сьогодні обратитися к нашим воєнослужащим, ко всім, хто знаходиться на
бойовому. President Putin, facing an election in March, made only passing reference in his New Year address on Sunday to his war in Ukraine, hailing his soldiers as heroes, but mostly emphasizing his country's unity and shared determination. In Israel, on the last day of the year, another fierce day of fighting between Israel and Hamas. Israel's prime minister says the war on Hamas is far from over. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has this story for us.
Body camera footage released by the Israel Defense Forces claims to show firefights between the country's military and Palestinian militants in the city of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. VOA cannot independently verify the dates or locations provided by the Israeli military. This is the latest in a conflict that started when Hamas stormed Israel on October 7th, killing 1,200 people and kidnapping roughly 240 others. To date, the Hamas-controlled health ministry in Gaza says Israeli forces have killed more than 21,600 Palestinians in Israel's ongoing strikes. And while much of the world has called for a humanitarian ceasefire to bring aid into Palestinian territories, U.S. President Joe Biden has so far resisted pressuring his Israeli counterpart to act to stop the fighting. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu held a media briefing over the weekend in which he said the war is in full swing, but warned it will continue for many more months. He also spoke of threats posed by Iran. The Islamic Republic backs Yemeni Houthis, a group the United States formerly designated as a terrorist organization. Western allies say Houthis attack and disrupt shipping commerce passing through the Red Sea. The White House says it's considering reclassifying them as a terror group. Congressional Republicans say the White House needs to do more to curb Tehran's proxies. Republican Representative Mike Turner, speaking on ABC's This Week as carried by X.
This administration has been very timid in responding to escalations by Iran. In order to be able to address this, they're going to have to look at operations into Yemen, where the capabilities are resident, where Iran continues to reload them as they attack commercial shipping areas and put at risk U.S. Military.
U.S. Central Command said the Navy destroyed Houthi boats whose crews attempted to board a container ship in the Red Sea. And the Israeli military this week claimed to have intercepted what it described as a hostile aerial target and content that VOA cannot independently verify. As smoke rose over northern Gaza Sunday amid Israel's continued campaign in the enclave, 2024 looks to hold more bloodshed in Palestinian territories as Israel stands by its stated goal of eradicating Hamas and a growing cast of actors enters the theater of war. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. The U.S. military says its forces opened fire, killing several Houthi rebels after the Houthis attacked a cargo ship in the Red Sea. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports on this escalation of hostilities linked to the war in Gaza.
U.S. Central Command says the crew of the USS Gravely Destroyer first shot down two anti-ship ballistic missiles fired at the Singapore-flagged Maersk Hangzhou late Saturday. The U.S. Navy says four small boats attacked the same cargo ship with small arms fire early Sunday, and rebels tried to board the vessel. Central Command says the attackers fired on helicopters from the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower, and the helicopters fired back, sinking three of the four boats. No damage to U.S. personnel or equipment was reported. I'm Julie Walker.
We're following these other stories from around the world. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country will launch three additional military spy satellites and produce more nuclear fissile materials. North Korea's Korean Central News Agency said Sunday that Kim made the comments during a key ruling party meeting met to set objectives for 2024. The news agency said Kim called for overwhelming war readiness to cope with what he called U.S.-led confrontational moves. Denmark's queen has announced that she plans to abdicate after 52 years and hand over the throne to her son, Crown Prince Frederik. The queen announced during her New Year's speech on Sunday she would step down on January 14th. That is the 52nd anniversary of her own accession to the throne at age 31. A new law in the U.S. state of California that bans people from carrying firearms in most public places is taking effect on Monday, even as a court case continues to challenge it. The law prohibits people from carrying concealed guns in 26 places, including parks, playgrounds, churches, banks, and zoos. The United States called Sunday for the peaceful and transparent resolution of any election disputes in Congo after President Felix Tshisekedi was declared winner of a second term. The latest now from Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan.
Felix Tshisekedi has been re-elected as Democratic Republic of Congo's president, according to the CENI, the country's election commission. Its head, Dennis Kadima, announced on Sunday that Tshisekedi gained 73.34% of the vote. Even before that confirmation, a group of Congo's main opposition presidential candidates asked supporters to take to the streets to protest following the release of provisional results. The presidential election was held on December 20th, but since then, logistical setbacks, an election day overrun, and an opaque vote count have fueled dispute. The opposition has alleged widespread irregularities, which they say have enabled fraud. Some of Tshisekedi's main challengers have called for a rerun of both the presidential and legislative elections. They accuse the CENI of allowing the vote to be tipped in the president's favor. The CENI and the government have dismissed these allegations. The government of Congo had previously rejected calls for a rerun of the elections.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan, the United States is following the process closely, a State Department spokesman said, stopping short of immediately congratulating Tshisekedi. It was a turbulent year in the U.S. politics as well. From a dramatic 15-round voting session that took place in selecting a leader for the U.S. House of Representatives to former President Donald Trump facing four criminal indictments. My colleague Kim Lewis spoke with John Fortier, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
Well, I think that was the beginning of 2023 that we saw, but it was related a bit to the midterm elections of November 2022, where Republicans did take back the House, but their performance was not as strong as they'd hoped, and they had a very tight majority, five seats in the House of Representatives. You know, Kevin McCarthy, in many ways, had done a lot to shore up his conservative faction within the Republican caucus in the House. But with five seats being all that he needed to make it difficult for him, first, it caused him almost to not get the speakership at the beginning of the year with this dramatic multi-round election. And then later in the year, obviously, it was what brought him down with just a few members of his caucus being able to stand up and say, we don't want you as speaker anymore, led to ultimately his demise and then ultimately the rise of Mike Johnson as speaker. So that's how we began the year, but it was something that continued throughout the year. And that narrow Republican majority really is what was driving that dynamic.
Can we see a more unified Republican Party in the year 2024?
Well, it still is a very narrow majority in the House for Republicans, and I think that may cause some difficulty. We are in the midst of primaries as well, but at some point we will have a Republican nominee. It looks like President Trump is the favorite to get that. I think there will be some coalescing around the nominee and looking into the 2024 election later in the year. I think that's probably true on both sides, but both Republicans and Democrats will likely return to their camps a bit more. So it'll be political, but I think there will be somewhat more unity in the political parties.
That was VOA's Kim Lewis speaking with John Fortier, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. As we start the new year, I just wanted to take a moment and look back at the United Nations Climate Summit, COP28. For the first time, the world united and voted to start reducing the use of fossil fuel to stop the devastating effects of global climate change. 2023 demolished temperature records worldwide. It was the hottest year on record, and some scientists say the hottest in 125,000 years. Those supercharged temperatures helped drive a series of climate disasters around the world. VOA's Steve Barragona has a look back.
Wildfires in Canada, flooding in Libya. Two disasters in a year of weather extremes. 2023 will go down as the hottest year on record. Every month from June through November was the hottest for that time of year.
July 2023 was the warmest July on record for the globe. It was the warmest July by a long shot.
September's global temperatures were so much hotter than normal that one climate scientist called them absolutely gobsmackingly bananas. Relentless heating from human-driven climate change, plus the periodic global weather phenomenon known as El Niño, drove extreme weather around the world.
So we know with this extra heat in the atmosphere, it brings with it extra energy, which means we get more intense extreme events.
Not every bout of bad weather is due to climate change. But climate scientists, what the World Weather Attribution website, found the fingerprints of global warming on these weather disasters. In April, Thailand and Laos broke all-time high temperature records. Scientists say that heat wave was nearly impossible without climate change. The Western Mediterranean shattered temperature records that month in a heat wave made 100 times more likely. Southern Europe roasted again in July. So did China and the United States-Mexico border region. The southwestern U.S. city of Phoenix logged 31 days over 43.3 degrees Celsius, or 110 Fahrenheit. That's a record.
This is not a record anyone wanted to break, but it's definitely one that people in Phoenix are not happy about.
The intensity of these heat waves was almost impossible without climate change, according to World Weather Attribution. But on today's hotter planet, we can expect them every 5, 10, or 15 years. Higher temperatures dry out soils and vegetation faster. That helped make the record-breaking wildfires that ravaged eastern Canada this year at least 7 times more likely and 50% more intense. That's also what amplified the severe droughts in Syria, Iraq, and Iran, and the food security crisis in Somalia and the rest of the Horn of Africa. Both were made at least 100 times more likely.
Although Somalia makes virtually no contribution to climate change, the Somalis are among the greatest victims.
Climate change intensifies droughts, but also floods, because warmer air holds more water, which means heavier rainstorms, like the one that burst dams in Libya in September and killed thousands. The World Weather Attribution team says it was 50 times more likely and 50% more intense than it would have been without climate change. And November's torrential rains in the Horn of Africa were about twice as intense.
Already the drought has brought many people in the area to the brink of what they are able to deal with. And this now followed by floods really shows the limits of what people can adapt to are really not far off in many parts of the world. And as long as we are keeping burning fossil fuels, these things will happen again and again and again.
Forecasters say El Nino probably will taper off around the middle of next year, but there's no sign that climate change is letting up. As we continue to warm the planet, weather that used to be extreme is happening more and more often. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
And finally, day one, new year, fresh start. Time when many people take inventory of their life and vow to make changes. New Year's resolutions, we call them.
Try to be more healthy, cut back on my drinking and cigar smoking, try to save up on some money, and overall try to live a better life.
The usual, lose weight, drink less, you know, exercise more. When I would start it on a certain day, then it felt like it was a task and you had to do it. But if you just try and live your life that way every day and give yourself a break now and then, you don't have to do it every day. So I found that I stick to those things longer than if I try and make a resolution.
Amit Futhi is a social psychologist who is a motivation and performance researcher at Western Governors University Labs and a research associate at the University of Pittsburgh.
As you think about goals, it's important to anchor them based on who you are and where you are now so that you set appropriate goals. And again, remembering that goals are only there to serve a function to get you started. And if they don't do that, then maybe that's not the appropriate goal for you.
For example?
For instance, they might have had a particular weight that they had when they were in high school, and they've hung on to that desired same weight for decades, but it's no longer relevant to who they are.
So if you've chosen to make some resolutions this year yourself, good luck. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
2023 has been another tragic year for Syrian civilians who were killed, injured, displaced, detained, and abducted in alarming numbers, and today face the danger of regional spillover. According to Geir Pedersen, Special Envoy of the UN Secretary General for Syria, there is an urgent need for maximum restraint by all actors, Syrian and non-Syrian, and a sustained de-escalation in and on Syria towards a nationwide ceasefire. As 2023 comes to a close, the Syrian political process remains frustratingly blocked, and the Syrian people are suffering greatly, said Robert Wood, United States Alternative Representative to the United Nations.
For more than 12 years, the Assad regime has waged a brutal war against the Syrian people. On top of that, Syrians are still reeling from the devastating impacts of February's earthquakes. Yet, rather than engage in a political process in the last few months, the Assad regime has stepped up its attacks on its own people in the northwest of Syria.
We all know the responsibility for this war lies at the feet of the Assad regime, said Ambassador Wood. In late December, the General Assembly voted on a U.S. co-facilitated resolution on the human rights situation in Syria that reminded the world of the abuses the regime wants us to forget. The use of chemical weapons, extrajudicial killings, torture and other ill treatment, unjust detentions, enforced disappearances, and gender-based violence.
We are alarmed by the reports that violence has reached its worst level since 2019. The hundreds of civilian deaths caused by the regime and Russian offensive in Idlib are deeply concerning. The destruction they have caused to infrastructure and the threats they pose to humanitarian operations put hundreds of thousands of people at risk during the cold winter months.
We join the majority of UN member states in reiterating the call for the Syrian regime to immediately release all those arbitrarily held and to provide information about the tens of thousands who are missing, said Ambassador Wood. At the same time, we share concerns about regional spillover.
It is in these moments that we must persevere and remain committed to achieving a Syrian-focused and Syrian-led solution to the conflict in line with Resolution 2254, the only viable roadmap for a lasting solution to the conflict.
The Syrian people have been waiting far too long, said Ambassador Wood. They deserve the future for which they have fought so hard, including the respect for their human rights and fundamental freedoms.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.